Shameless plug. Shameless plug. Plugs whatever a shameless dog.
Hmm.
Buy the mag. Do it now. Go to shops. Spend your cash. Look out! Here comes a shameless plug. Hello, pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the latest episode of The Shameless Plug, the show in which I get together every single month with the Empire editor, Nick Desemlian, on the cover, Spider-Man. Brand new day, the fourth MCU Spider-Man film. This is very exciting indeed. Nick,
yeah.
Tell us about how we covered this movie.
Well, we have had Spider-Man on the cover before a few times.
Spider-Man.
We have never previously had Spider-Man and ninjas on the cover. Is it ninjas or is it ninja? I still go back and forth.
I believe the plural of it's like sheep. The plural of sheep is sheep.
That's not how we've done it in the magazine. So I believe there was a detailed and very thorough debate, and we settled on ninjas.
See, my understanding is that the plural of ninja is ninja, but I might be wrong about that.
I think we looked it up. I'm pretty sure that we definitely looked into it. Sadly, the only way to know for sure is to ask a ninja, and they are famously reclusive and stealthy. There might be one in the room with us right now.
There might be.
Reveal yourself, ninja.
Of course, there is a film, Three Ninjas, and it's ninjas.
Oh.
So you always go by that. That's your North Star.
Yeah. They never did a Beverly Hills Ninjas, did they? They never quite got to the sequel.
No, they never
that
quite
one.
Got but, that, yeah.
Yeah, Three Ninjas. Okay, well, I'm going by that. That seems like as good a reference point as any.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway, we have Tom Holland's Spider-Man fleeing from Ninja on the newsstand cover and shooting web towards the camera. I think this is a great cover. I got to say, this is my favorite of the Spider-Man covers we've done. And we've been doing them for over 20 years. I think the first one was for the original Raimi one. We did
a
lenticular cover.
We did.
Where you moved it and Spider-Man moved slightly. And that was very cool.
That's true.
Yeah, and then we have an amazing subscriber cover. Edgar Asensio has created a piece of art for us. Again, the ninjas are called The Hand.
Yes.
Not to be confused with The Foot. From the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they're completely different.
They were inspired, though, by The Hand, weren't they? It's a riff on The Hand, I believe.
Yeah. It seems like.
Is that just dropping for you now?
Yeah. Yes. It's all coming clear. This is like the end of Usual Suspects. I'm going to drop my mug on the floor. I can't believe it.
You're genuinely. I'm reeling. I watched you get that in real time.
I'm reeling. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, who would win in a fight between The Hand and The Foot?
That's a very, very good question. I would say The Hand.
I would say The Foot.
Okay.
So there we go. But yes, this is a very exciting... this was the world first interviews with pretty much everyone involved in this. With everyone involved. Tom Holland, Zendaya, the director, Destin... Destin Daniel Cretton, who did Shang-Chi, which I really like. That's one of my favorites of the recent Marvels. We talked to Jon Bernthal.
Yes.
Punisher himself. And very excitingly, this article was written by Anthony Breznican, a.k.a. Brez. He had to grapple with the web of intrigue, shall we say.
Very good, Nick.
Thanks, man. And he has done it. And I think there are many secrets that were not divulged in those interviews, but he also gets some really, really interesting insights into how this film came together. This film was delayed. And if it hadn't been delayed, Tom Holland wouldn't have been able to be in the Odyssey.
Yes.
Because they felt the script. You know, he gets very involved in these films, Tom Holland.
Does.
He's not just the star, he's... you know, he gets right in there in the nitty gritty.
He does.
And they didn't feel the script was quite where it needed to be. So they postponed it. They spent a long time in the writer's room. And he told us that he pitched a tagline for this film that was rejected. Two words, spider puberty.
Oh, yeah, I have heard that.
Yeah. I think we put that online. But that was rejected, sadly. But that theme is basically in the movie, how this is basically, he's got changes happening. And he's grappling with that. He's also grappling with the fact that no one can remember who he is. Has that ever happened to you? Spider-Man.
No one can remember who he is?
Well, yeah.
Who?
Oh. God, this is going to be a long podcast.
Because this is the big plot development at the end of No Way Home, where Doctor Strange cast a spell so the world forgot who Peter Parker was.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works logistically. So does he still have a social security number? Does he still have... you know, driver's license.
I think he's got all that stuff. It's just people can't remember who he is. They've forgotten about him. A bit like the film Home Alone.
Yes.
So there's a possibility that one of the secrets they're holding back is that the Wet Bandits are going to be in this film. That's so genuinely.
Well, everyone else is in it. So you know, the Hulk, the Punisher.
Yeah. Imagine if Joe Sadie Pesci Sink. And Daniel Stern are the big villains that they're holding back.
Well, they might be lost in New York. You never know. But yeah, this is tremendous. I'm going to give Breshnigan the treatment. I'm going to read out his first line, as is tradition on this podcast. I forgot to do it last month. Much to people's chagrin. And it simply is, Spider-Man has lost his amazing friends.
That's a good opener. You couldn't even ruin that with your voice. You gave it your best and you couldn't ruin it.
I mean, it's me proof, isn't it, really? This is a reference, of course, to the classic Spider-Man and his amazing friends cartoon, which I loved as a kid growing up, and I watched a couple of episodes of, because it's now on Disney Plus, and I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. But hopefully this film will not be terrible, and this is very, very exciting indeed. Spider-Man, Brand New Day on the cover of Empire Magazine.
One of the exciting things about this film is that Spider-Man is going to team up with the Punisher, and we have an amazing image of the two of them together, and yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic because the Punisher is prone to murdering people and swearing a lot. Two things which I imagine we're not going to see much of in this film. So I think Peter Parker's going to have his work cut out, getting him to behave. But there's really lovely stuff in the piece where Tom Holland and Jon Bernthal both talk about how they got to know each other. They made a film in 2015 called The Pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. And they, at the time, Tom Holland was auditioning to be Spider-Man and Jon Bernthal was helping him with his auditions. And then when Jon Bernthal was auditioning to play The Punisher, Tom Holland was helping him.
So that's
really lovely. And then now they're in a big-ass film together.
They're in a big-ass film together. They're not in a Jackass film together, but they could be if they wanted to, because it seems like the Jackass crew are hanging up their boots with the next and last Jackass film, Jackass Best and Last, which is actually out very, very soon in cinemas. And we've done a feature talking to Team Jackass about saying goodbye in inimitable fashion.
Yeah, we talked to the whole crew. Johnny Knoxville, Steve-O, Spike Jones.
Did we speak to B-Man?
I don't think we did.
Oh, okay.
I don't think we did off the top of my head, but who knows? There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in this feature. I mean, it's an amazing story of the entire Jackass era.
Yeah.
And the many highs and lows, often involving them putting things into their bottoms. I mean, there's a very real possibility they may put this issue up their bottoms by the time this is printed.
I actually interviewed Johnny Knoxville and the director, Jeff Tremaine, yesterday, and I didn't think of that. I didn't think about taking this and seeing whether...
Oh, my God.
But Johnny Knoxville doesn't really do that stuff.
Mm.
If you watch the Jackass movies, he's the cheerleader in chief. He's the ringmaster general who gets other people to shove things up their arses.
Yeah.
Not necessarily him.
This piece gives you an amazing sense of the interplay between the guys, like how they're kind of like getting each other to top what the previous person's done. Mm-hmm. But also just the friendship that these guys just love each other. And you know, they're at an age where you wouldn't expect them to be doing the stuff that they're doing, but, you know, because they're like a band of brothers. And I should mention this was written by Ayanna Murray, who does an amazing job of painting a picture of this band of absolute lunatics. Their films are unlike anything. Thank God.
I love these movies absolutely unreservedly.
How long would you last if you were in the Jackass? If you were in the Jackass crew, how long would you last?
10 seconds.
I got on a skateboard once and I ended up in A&E because I had to have 12 stitches put in my chin because my chin fell off essentially. So I would be out by the end of the day.
I went to the Junker the other day and I was waiting to go in to talk to Johnny and Jeff, Jermaine, who's directed all these movies.
Yeah.
And the publicist said, I was in the screening the other day and I got almost as much enjoyment from watching you watch the movie as watching the movie itself, because I was just I was cackling with joy, but I was also several times I threw my hands over my head and went, no.
This sounds much like experiencing James Dyer watching West Side Story, but without the joy.
I'd love to see James watching this because he's openly contemptuous of these movies.
He doesn't understand most things. Do you remember when Johnny Knoxville and Jeff Tremaine and Spike Jones came into our old office in Covent Garden? We used to have people come in for web chats and they came in and Johnny Knoxville cut off a load of Spike Jones's hair, sellotaped it to a bit of paper.
That's right.
And gave it to Helen and said, this is so you can clone him. in 20 years. And what happened to it?
Well, we cloned him.
We did clone him.
Yeah.
We got a Spike Jonze.
Yeah.
Where is he?
He's just running around here somewhere.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He found a little door somewhere and he went inside it and he's ended up in John Malkovich's brain. He was last seen just off the New Jersey Turnpike.
Wow. Okay. This explains a lot.
This explains a lot. Right. Ayanna Murray, let's give her the treatment.
Since the birth of cinema, physical comedians have brought slapstick to the big screen.
Yeah.
I want to know more.
Yeah.
I want to know more.
Yeah. Well, read on, but not now. Not now, because we've got things to do.
Yeah.
But great, great headline work by Alex Godfrey, features editor, as always, with Off Their Trolley.
Off Their Trolley.
The opening picture is indeed them in a gigantic shopping trolley.
Yes.
Which is an image I absolutely love.
All right, next feature, we're racing through this stuff this week. Minions and Monsters is coming out.
This is a deranged feature section, just to say, going from Jackass, Best and Last, into Minions and Monsters.
Spider-Man, Jackass, Minions. Yeah. These are my three food groups. These are the things that sustain me. I'm going to read out the opening line of this first, because I think this is the best opening line the entire issue. And it's one I wish I had written.
Yeah.
Here we go. This is from Amelia Tate. He had us at bellow. Not hello, but bellow.
Genius.
As in bellow, as in the things the minions say, because the minions are voiced by Nick.
Pierre Coffin.
Correct.
Pierre Coffin, a man who, a Frenchman who we have been trying to get into Empire for years. I'm not kidding. He has been one of our white whales because, you know, he is the voice of the minions and we have long wanted to talk to him about it and be like, why and how do you come up with those noises? What the hell is it all about? And all of those questions and more are answered in this feature, which is absolutely brilliant. Amelia Tate is one of my favorite writers, and it's just joyous. It's really, really fun and really like emotional as well. You really go on a journey with this guy who co-created the Minions and then left the Minions for a while, and now he's back and he's directing and he's also doing all the burbles and noises, and you'll find out by reading it how he comes up, like the interior logic of the Minions. And there is a 15-minute scene in the new Minions film where they just talk in Minionese, which is revealed in this as well. So the whole thing is super fun.
I am so excited about this movie, Minions and Monsters. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope that it never stops, never stopping.
Ha, good segue.
Whoa.
Good segue.
I just turned the page. I didn't even know that the next feature was about pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping. No, I did. What can I say? Because this is celebrating, Nick, the next feature, the 10th anniversary of one of the greatest comedies of the last, 10 years, which is Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping from The Lonely Island.
Amazing film. If you're not up on The Lonely Island, you know, they're the guys who kind of revolutionized Saturday Night Live and online comedy with their digital shorts. And you'll find all of those on YouTube. They do a podcast every week at the moment where they go through them and have guests on. And they are absolutely brilliant and hilarious. And this is one of our favorite films in the office. Although it flopped, it didn't do well.
No.
And I remember seeing this in America. It came out the same weekend as The Shallows. And I happened to be in LA for something. And I went to a double bill of The Shallows and Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping. And there was like one other person in the screening with me. And it was sad because it was like, this is a film that's meant to be seen with an audience. And I still haven't had that experience of watching this film. I almost chose it for our all-nighter and then went with The Frighteners instead. But I really want to see this with a crowd. It's such a funny film. And we talked to them. Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, Akiva Schaffer. And it's pretty damn fun. John Nugent. John Nugent talked to them, and if you listen to their podcast, you'll know that they have a little sort of greeting. If you see one of the Lonely Island in the wild, you are supposed to shout "Quaid Army" at them for reasons that are too convoluted for this podcast, and to which they will reply "Righteous Kill" for reasons that are also. And so, John started the interview with them discussing what would be the British version. I think Quid Army is the British version, and they were discussing what would be the British version of Righteous Kill. I think John suggested Splendid, Splendid Kill. But anyway, this is all very confusing if you're not up on your Lonely Island, but it is a banging film, and it's a really fun Q&A.
Absolutely, and I love this movie. I prefer their first Lonely Island movie, Hot Rod, to this, but it'd be a great double bill. And they're absolutely terrific, terrific comedies. And because they both tanked, they haven't really done one since.
No, it's a shame. But it's one of the people love them and love this film. And by the way, in a massive Empire exclusive, we talked to Michael Bolton. We talked to Michael Bolton for this piece.
From Office Space.
Not that one.
Oh, okay.
Not that one. The other significant Michael Bolton. So Michael Bolton has collaborated with them on SNL. And also has an amazing guest appearance in Popstar. Yes. And we talk to him in this issue. That is reason enough to buy it, surely.
He sings Incredible Thoughts, which is a tremendous song. Here's John's opening line. Ever since I was born, I was dope. Up next, Nicholas, we have Supergirl. Supergirl. So we were on set of Supergirl. We sent
Helen.
Supergirl and Helen O'Hara. And tell us more.
Yes, so Helen went on set here in the UK and they were filming a Kryptonian funeral scene.
Oh.
But who is dead? And can you die if you're from Krypton?
Yeah, of course you can.
Oh, right.
Yeah, especially if you're on Krypton.
Oh, yeah. You're well dead.
Yeah.
So anyway, you will find out what a Kryptonian funeral will look like by picking up this issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are aliens in this movie. This feels quite Guardians of the Galaxy-ish in tone. And this sort of Supergirl ends up going out into space and encountering all kinds of gnarly creatures. There's a really fun sequence I'm looking forward to, which is they're like on a kind of intergalactic bus. It's like an intergalactic Greyhound with a load of sort of schlubby aliens, and that turns into a big action scene. But yeah, we were on set, and we started for Jason Momoa as Lobo.
Lobo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not Aquaman.
No.
This is completely different. This is a reboot. This is the second movie in James Gunn's DCU, following hot on the heels of last year's Superman. Supergirl, of course, is Superman's cousin.
Yeah.
So that is exciting.
Yeah, we shall see. It's out very soon.
Very soon, next week, in fact.
Next week? Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, if Jason Momoa is riding a fish, Aquaman. He's riding a bike, Lobo. That's how I remember. I had to write that down.
Yes.
So yes.
Very excited to see this one and to see how Millie Alcock fares as Supergirl. Here's Helen's opening line. When Millie Alcock was invited to a screen test for Supergirl in James Gunn's Superman and the wider DC Universe, she was sick to her stomach with nerves.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah.
It was good.
I want to know more.
Intrigued.
Why was she sick to her stomach with nerves?
Yeah.
What happened?
Did you see Dean Cain, the worst Superman? Was attempting to troll this film and going, how could she have pierced her ears if she's a Supergirl? Because you can't pierce skin if you...
Of course you can.
Yeah.
Of course you can.
I believe James Gunn came and just shut it down immediately with logic.
Yeah. Piss off, Dean Cain.
Yeah. He's the worst.
Yes, indeed. He is the worst Superman. I tell you who might have been a good Superman, Nick. Oh, my segueing powers are in full effect. But he was never given the chance. Timothy Olyphant, who has amazing hair.
Yeah.
And he is the subject of one of our nice, great, big old sit down, have a big old chat about your career interview type pieces.
Empire Focus.
That's, I knew there was a more pithy name for it.
Yeah. We went out and we did an incredible photo shoot. I mean, the man is just ludicrously cool.
He's nearly 60.
Yeah.
Look at him. Fantastic. Look at him, Nick. Walk around him.
Yeah. His aura is strong.
He has. Much aura.
Yeah, we dispatched
Jamie Graham. Yes.
Our very own Timothy Olyphant.
Graham Jamie.
Jamie's got great hair as well.
He has hair.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of hair. There's no question about it.
So anyway, Timothy Olyphant, he talks about all kinds of stuff. He talks about Justified. He talks about The Mandalorian. And he was amazing in Alien Earth, I thought. I'm excited for, he teases what we're going to get next in season 2. Which is, he says, shit's going to get weird.
I imagine
it was pretty weird the first time.
Weird. Yeah. I love him. I think he's absolutely tremendous.
Very cool dude.
Very, very, very cool dude indeed. In fact, that is what Jamie focused on in his opening sentence, which is as follows. Timothy Olyphant is one cool dude. There you go. Simple.
There we go. I knew I got it from
Simple.
Somewhere.
Yes. Straight to the point. And next up, I think lastly, we have the Empire Deep Dive, which is a kind of exploration of the kind of, I don't know, the more weird, unusual, esoteric side of Hollywood. And this month, it's about Houdini.
Houdini!
Which sounds like something the Minions would say.
Hang on, this feature has just disappeared in front of my eyes. Where is it? No, it's here. I just dropped it. Yes, Houdini. I didn't know any of this. I didn't know Houdini made movies. And I didn't know Houdini almost died in a plane crash, apparently, or did he? This is really fascinating. I always enjoy reading these deep dives. We just basically set a writer loose on quite an obscure topic, and you end up learning a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Even about ravens. But yeah, this is all about Harry Houdini, and it is by
Brian J. Robb,
and the research is amazing. I believe he's written a book called Houdini Unlocked.
He has,
so he knows his stuff, and you can read all about it. You can read all about the highs and lows and why he was forced to retire and all that.
Yes, didn't he die when he was? Someone punched him in the stomach without him being, because I think he boasted that he could absorb blows to the stomach, but he had to prepare himself. He had to gird himself before he was punched.
Yeah.
And then some prick punched him without,
when he wasn't ready.
Burst something inside him, not even Harry Houdini could escape from the Grim Reaper.
No.
Which is not Brian's opening line, but it's close. His opening line is, high above Los Angeles, Harry Houdini was fighting for his life.
That's a grabber.
It's a grabber.
That's a grabber.
It's
it could only have been improved by the word below.
Hello!
If it had been in Minion-y.
Harry Houdini was one cool dude until something in his stomach burst.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
No.
It was a long time ago.
No.
It's fine. But yeah, that's exciting. That's exciting. We don't just talk about the feature section in this shameless plug, though, folks. We talk about some of the other sections. Should we talk about Beth's section, first word, which is the news section, is very exciting.
Lives up to its name.
Oh, my word.
A very exciting exclusive interview with Brad Bird, the great bad Brad Bird.
The great bad bird.
The great bad bird.
Yes.
Jimmy the Raven. Yes. No, Brad Bird is back. He is, he's been working on an animated film, and it's called Ray Gun.
Brad Bird working on an animated film? Tell me more. But this is not a Pixar film, right? This is like is this an independent film? Is this what is this? This film.
Netflix.
This Ray Gun.
Netflix.
Wow. So Brad Bird has left the bosom of Luxo Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And gone for the bosom of ta-dun.
But this looks very cool. This looks very up my alley, my dark shadowy alley, because it's a noir inspired animation.
Yes.
And the hero is indeed called Ray Gun.
Not to be confused with Ronald Reagan, but a man called Ray Gunn, who at one point in this picture here holds a ray gun, which is exciting.
Yeah.
He's voiced by Sam Rockwell. Scarlett Johansson's also in it.
Tom Waits is everywhere this year. He's in all kinds of stuff, including something I know, which I'm not allowed to say. But
what's he building in there?
He's lending his voice to all kinds of stuff.
No.
Doesn't sound like Tom Waits, but he's having a year. He's having a moment.
He is. That's exciting. That's very exciting.
So I'm absolutely on board for this.
Yes.
I like noir films. I like Brad Bird, and I like animation. So
I like Netflix.
I like punny names.
I like puns.
I like characters who are holding things that have the same name as them.
I like people voiced by Sam Rockwell.
I like pages and I like words.
I like Scarlett Johansson. This is fantastic.
Yeah. So this is very exciting. Michael Leder wrote that.
Yeah.
He is an animation
leader.
He's a thought leader.
He's a leader.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Also in the issue, we have a look at the upcoming film from Jane Schoenbrunn, who directed, of course, I Saw the TV Glow, and this is called Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma.
I call it TSADACM for short. It's only slightly shorter, but you trim a second off. I have seen this film. I think I can reveal that.
Can you?
Yeah, it's
screened at festivals and shit.
It's been out, and this film will melt your mind and then solidify it again.
It's a mind melter.
And then explode it.
Holy shit.
It's a melter and exploder. It's both. It's a crazy film, and it's got to be experienced. It's so original and crazy and intense. I saw it at lunchtime screening. And whenever we see a film at lunchtime, we walk on down Soho and see it in a little screening room, and it is always the craziest film. That basically you come out and you have to like answer emails and you don't know where you are. It's like when you see something like The Greasy Strangler or Teenage Sex and Death or Camp Miasma, like it's very hard to recover. You need a bit of processing time.
You do.
It's hard to just launch straight back into a working day. But anyway,
the fact that you've mentioned this in the same breath as The Greasy Strangler has got me.
It's a very different,
very interesting.
No, it's a very different kind of film, and it's nowhere near as comedic as that. But it's just in terms of originality and in terms of impact, and you just sit up straight because you're seeing things you never thought you'd see. Jane Schoenbrunn is terrific. I thought I saw The TV Glow was one of the best films of that year, and they've outdone it.
That's exciting.
This next story is very cool.
Yeah, I didn't write a lot in this issue, for which there would be much rejoicing. And but I was just coming back from a big holiday, and that's kind of affected the next couple of issues as well. I don't write a lot in the next issue either, so you'd be rushing out to buy that also. But I did write something pretty cool, which was, and this happened 2 days after I arrived back from holiday. So I had just got back from the big old cruise, and I got a phone call or a text from Beth Webb, who edits this section, saying, would you like to go to North Wales to interview members of Monty Python about a Terry Jones statue that has been unveiled in North Wales? And as chance would have it, I was in Manchester, and I was like, if things can be worked out so I don't have to go back to London, and I can stay in Manchester, and I can then drive to North Wales on this Friday and go to Colwyn Bay in North Wales, I will do this. And that's what happened. So this was a very exciting way to come back from holiday.
Yeah.
To go to Colwyn Bay, which is the place where Terry Jones, one of the members of Monty Python, who passed away a couple of years ago, was being immortalized on the beach there with a statue of him, a bronze statue of him from Monty Python's Blackmail sketch, where he was completely starker. So this is a statue of Terry Jones in the nude.
I have to say, your first line is fantastic. I'm going to read it out.
Oh, okay. Can you do a voice?
Yeah, I'm going to try. If you want to rub Terry Jones's bum, and who in their right mind wouldn't, here's how you should go about it.
There we go. Thank you. Thanks.
Even Nick. I couldn't ruin that.
Thanks, Nick.
That's a great line. It's a great line.
Thank you.
I was being sincere.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I loved reading this. I loved writing this piece. I'm a huge, huge, huge Monty Python fan. I jumped at the chance to do this. I'm so glad this worked out logistically, because it wasn't just going to see the statue being unveiled. It was seeing the statue being unveiled in front of a crowd of about 2,000 ardent Monty Python fans, many of whom had made the journey to North Wales and were in costume dressed up as either the Spanish Inquisition, which I did not expect.
Yeah.
Didn't expect that, Nick. Or dressed as a shrubbery, or dressed as one of the Knights of Knee, or
I love the detail. Something. There's like this little boy who's dressed as the Black Knight saying, you shall not pass.
Yes.
It's amazing.
None shall pass.
Yeah, it's a really, really fun piece.
But also, I got a chance to talk to some members of Python. I got the chance to talk to Sir Michael Palin. I got the chance to talk to Terry Gilliam, who was there. Susie Eddie Izzard, who's a huge Python fan and actually contributed to the crowdfunding of the statue, was there also. And Carol Cleveland, who I guess is the honorary seventh Python, was also there. And it was just an incredible day. The sun came out. It was a beautiful, beautiful day in, I think it was late April, in Colwyn Bay, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous town. And I was just so overjoyed to have this experience. I'd interviewed Terry Jones a number of times over the years. I was so sad when he died recently. And so I was so, so glad that I could do this.
I think I've only interviewed John Cleese.
He's the one I haven't interviewed.
John Cleese, James and I went, and he was putting out a documentary about lemurs. And so James and I went to a hotel and spoke to John Cleese about lemurs
Lemurs or llamas?
Lemurs.
Lemurs. What's it?
The Madagascan monkey. Okay, lemur. Monkey things.
Yeah.
Which was unexpected, but we threw in some other questions.
Oh,
but,
my God.
But yeah.
That's
Michael Palin, I have said hello to and shaken his hand, but not interviewed. he wasn't very happy.
I've done them all. Only Graham Chapman remains elusive.
Well.
I haven't interviewed John Cleese, but hopefully I will take him off my list.
You asked a very inspired question of Michael Palin, which is what Monty Python sketch would you have if you were a statue? You have to buy the issue.
Have to buy the issue to find out.
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting. Next page is also me talking to the director of Evil Dead, Burn. If you know anything about this show and about me, you'll know I'm a huge Evil Dead fan, so I'm very excited about that. Sebastian Fanicek is his name.
Yeah.
And kind of figuring out what he's doing with some of the touchstones of that franchise. Evil Dead burned out in a couple of weeks' time.
Yep. Ben Travis spoke to Leslie Headland because The Acolyte, the Star Wars TV show on Disney Plus, suddenly had a resurgence and shot up the charts. And so that's the joyous thing about working for a film magazine, is you can just say, ask someone, do you want to talk about it? And so we sent a message to Leslie Headland, and she was like, yeah, I'll talk about it. And then, it was a really interesting chat, and she's hopeful that she might get to do another season, a second season. But that's super interesting.
And we have a really interesting piece. It's a very, very sad origins. The great artist, Tony Stella, passed away a few weeks ago, and he had done some work for Empire over the last couple of years. An incredible, incredible artist. He also did a lot of posters and a lot of DVD cover art illustrations, and he was a huge Columbo fan. I had long, long planned to buy one of his prints of Columbo with his dog, but sadly we'll never do that now. And he passed away very suddenly a couple of months ago, and Alex reached out to James Mangold, for whom he had done some work in the past, Tony Stella, that is, not Alex, and they spoke together about Tony Stella. So it's a lovely tribute to Tony
Stella.
Yeah,
it's a really nice full circle thing. I mean, we did a Copland feature, which Alex wrote, and Tony Stella created this amazing piece of art. So he did subscriber covers for us. Genius artist, just had such a unique, beautiful, elegant kind of style. And James Mangold talks very movingly about him and they're working together and you know, he really did something unique, so it's a real loss.
Yeah, very much so. Just a couple of last things. In the news section, there is a little piece about a restored version of Gremlins, which has got people all kinds of excited.
Yeah.
A look at another upcoming animated film called Forgotten Island. There is a bit of speculation about what might happen with the next Hunger Games movie, which is exciting. There is a piece about a film that was apparently shot by a dog.
Yes, this is an amazing piece. Beth went to the premiere of this short film made by a dog. It is about Hitler's dog.
Wow.
It's about Hitler's dog. But Beth went to a screening where there were lots of dogs sitting on the seats, and it was a very unique experience, and it's a really interesting piece about it, and very good piece, 10 out of 10.
They're good dogs. They're good dog pieces, Brant, 14 out of 10. All right. So, and the how much is a pint of milk subject this month is Jermaine Clement.
Yeah.
From Flight of the Conchords and Alice and Steve, which is on Disney Plus right now. And as you would expect, it is a deadpan joy. John Nugent's section, the reviews section, has all the reviews of films, TVs, TV shows, books, and games that you could possibly wish to read. It is a cracker, so check it out.
5 stars for Spider-Noir, which
Five
I need to watch.
For
it's another
still,
TV show. I have so many TV shows.
I haven't got round to it. I know, because we probably should do a spoiler special on that as well. We did do spoiler specials, weekly ones, in fact, for Daredevil Born Again Season 2. And that is kind of where we start the best section of the magazine, quite frankly. It's the final cut section, edited by, Chris Hewitt.
Yeah, it's certainly the place to go if you want to read about Cyrano de Bergerac.
That's me.
It turns out.
Yeah.
Should we get the Cyrano de Bergerac?
No,
in the room.
No. Okay. We're gonna get to that.
All right.
We're gonna get to that.
All right.
Because Final Cut starts with an in-depth interview with Charlie Cox that I did. Charlie Cox, of course, is Daredevil. He is Matt Murdock, and this contains big old spoilers for Daredevil Born Again Season 2, but it is a really fun interview. Had a lot of time talking to Charlie, and not as much as I would have liked, but he is a really, really cool, fun guy.
So this
Charlie
issue,
Cox
we talked,
is a cool dude.
Yeah, he is. We're good. So we talked to Daredevil, we talked to the Punisher, and we talked to Spider-Man. Do you think Daredevil will? There are rumors that Daredevil will pop up in Brand New Day.
I think he will.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So the Empire Masterpiece is Serana de Bergerac, written by Helen O'Hara, which has been published here in July 2026. And a reader wrote in to tell us that we also published an Empire Masterpiece on Serana de Bergerac, also written by Helen O'Hara 10 years ago. This was deliberate. People think that this was an oversight, that I have a list of all the Empire Masterpieces, and whenever someone pitches a masterpiece, I type in the name and see whether it comes up in the list. And if it doesn't come up in the list, I will consider it. And if it does come up in the list, obviously I will reject it. But on this occasion, this was entirely deliberate. I thought, you know what, 10 years have passed since Helen last wrote about this film. No, it was a fuck-up.
If you did it with Groundhog Day, you could style that one out. It's like, just keep every 10 years, do a Groundhog Day.
That would be amazing.
You know what? I can't give you too hard a time about this, because when I was in charge of Masterpiece, the same exact thing happened, but with LA Confidential, where I managed to recommission, and I think it may even have been Dan Jolin writing it twice.
It was the same writer.
So, I mean, this is... occasionally, it's like The Matrix. There's a glitch.
But I do have a list. This is the thing. I do have a list. The list is life.
You're not checking it twice.
I did check it twice. Serana de Bergerac didn't come up. So unless it... Mm. When did it... Anyway, for whatever reason, it's a different piece. It's a completely different piece. Helen has written a completely different piece. This is the same piece. This is not the same piece.
Any other words, the same.
Serana de Bergerac, Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah. So those are the same. We'll refund everyone for those words.
You have the Luz...
Yep.
They're all.
It's probably the word nose in there somewhere.
Nose is in there. French.
Let us know, readers, if you have got both copies, let us know which is the better piece.
How different it is as well. This is what I'm fascinated to see, because I spoke to Helen about this. I said, hey, Helen, did you know that you'd already written an Emperor Masterpiece on Surrounded by Shrek? She went, oh, I wondered why it felt so familiar.
I can only imagine how much Helen is writing about Serrano de Bergerac on an almost weekly basis.
See, this is how this works, just to pull the curtain back. Every now and again, I will, you know, I have a list of masterpieces, and, you know, we always have to commission the next month or next 2 months, ahead of ourselves. So I will email these writers and say, can you pitch something to me? And they'll pitch some stuff, then we'll decide something that's very masterpiece worthy. And Helen always pitches Serana de Bergerac. So the next time I commission Helen, which will be probably a year or so from now, if she pitches Serana de Bergerac again, I'll know. This time I'll be onto her. I'll be onto her and her wily ways. Mm. I'll sniff it out with my giant schnoz. The ranking is the films of 1996. We have a piece in which we talked to Lawrence Kasdan about the re-release of Body Heat, the great Body Heat. I speak to the director of Jack Ryan Ghost War for our spoiler special. Kim's Krypton It Up a Storm in his column. I spoke to Russell Mulcahy for Highlander about one of the great sword-swinging showdowns from that. And Mike Figgis is this month's Time Capsule, the great English director. And there we go.
It's Nick. Stacked. And a quiz on rom-coms.
Quiz on rom-coms, which ordinarily we would do. I would throw a couple of questions at you, but we have people banging on the door ready to kick us the hell out of here, so we should probably go. Go buy it right now. All good, evil, virtual news agents. Sign up for the Empire VIP Club as well, if you don't already do that.
I believe we have a pretty banging subscription deal going at the moment. So if you're not a subscriber, you'll get the issue ahead of everyone else. You can be really smug about that. And you get some beautiful cover art that no one else gets. And you can just say you're an Empire subscriber. It's pretty cool. So check it out.
I'd
love to... And then also the VIP Club. Yeah, if you're not part of that, we have some very exciting screenings coming
up. Very exciting.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. This has been The Shameless Plug. People wonder why we do this. It's because I was bitten by a radioactive plug.
Was it shameless?
It was shameless, and now I must shamelessly plug. This is my lot in life. Thank you so much for listening. Bye, Nick.
Bye, guys.
See you next time. Bye-bye.